Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoCellaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Friday, February 15th, 2008, and this is show number 135. Wait a minute, did I say Friday? I thought the show only came out on Sundays. Guess what? This week you're getting a bonus show. I did a great interview today, and I just couldn't wait to get it out. Sit back and enjoy. So somehow I got on the mailing list for O'Reilly Books, which isn't a bad list to be on, actually. I'm not quite sure why I'm on it, but in nerddom, their books are some of the best. One day, Mary Rotman of O'Reilly sent out a message about a new book called Design Accessible Websites by Jeremy, I'm going to pronounce that Seidlick, I think it is. Well, this is one of great interest to me because, of course, on the topic, I'm really interested in accessibility, but unfortunately, I'm not a web designer, so I didn't think I could benefit from that book. However, my good friend Paige Isinger is a web designer. She's also the host of the Views from the Coop podcast, hosted at viewsfromthecoop.com. We thought it'd be fun if she read the book and did all the work and then gave us a review of it in an interview. My whole job was to get her a review copy of the book. So I'd like to welcome Paige Isinger. How are you doing today, Paige?
I did all the work, Allison.
Yeah, I know. See how that works? It's cool.
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really good today. So tell us a little bit about the web development that you do.
It's very, very simple. I do the simplest web development that I possibly can, which it turns out is a good thing when it comes to designing accessible websites. I do a couple of monthly magazines, believe it or not. One's a mule magazine.
Mule as in donkey?
And the other one's a Beagle magazine, which I'll bet after Westminster, their circulation is going to skyrocket.
Oh, that's right. A Beagle won for the first time ever in the dog show, huh?
Uh-huh. And I'll bet their circulation is just, well, hopefully it'll go wild.
That's pretty fun. By the way, Best in Show happens to be one of my favorite movies. Have you ever seen that?
I've never seen that. Who's in that?
It's done by the guys that did Spinal Tap and all those weird movies. It's absolutely hysterical. It's basically a documentary about the Ukanuba dog show, but it's all a comedy, and it's absolutely hysterical. A great, great movie pick there.
Well, I'm going to have to put that on my list and check it out then. I can get it on, for at home, right?
Oh, yeah. It's been out for years and years and years. It's just wonderful. It's hilarious.
Well, hopefully nobody put it out on HD DVD since Toshiba's getting ready to pull the plug on that one any day now.
I didn't jump. I'm just going to wait and see how this whole thing rolls out. So, well, anyway, back to the book. So you actually read the book, right?
Well, I read parts of it.
Okay, as much as your ADD would allow?
Well, that, and also when I started reading it, let me tell you a little bit about Jeremy, and I don't know whether it's Seidlick or Seidick, but, you know, whatever.
Oh, yeah, there isn't an L, is there?
But I want to tell you a little bit about this guy first. He's the director of research technology development at the University of Nebraska Lincoln's Center for Instructional Innovation. Hmm. So, you know, with all those big words.
He must know his stuff.
He knows his stuff, and he does have a background in computer science and cognitive psychology. Ooh. So the combination of those two probably means that he really, really does know what he's talking about. He's had plenty of years of experience in developing these type of websites, which we should all do. And in the beginning of the book, the reason that I didn't read it through is in the beginning of the book, he tells you that, okay, we need to cover some very basic premises or ideas here to get started, but then the book is more for reference. It's set up so that you can go from chapter to chapter depending on what it is you're looking for.
So he gave you permission to not read straight cover to cover.
Yes, he gave you permission not to read cover to cover, and so I didn't. But I did go through and highlight the parts that were most interesting to me and the parts that I really wanted to know the most about as a web designer. And it's great because you don't feel like you're, you know how you can read a book sometimes and you go from chapter one and then you go to chapter five and you really needed to know what happened in chapters two through four.
Yeah.
This one's not that way. Each of these chapters can pretty much stand by themselves. And if they cannot do that, Allison, the cool thing that Jeremy does is he will say, at this point, go back to chapter such and such.
Oh, that's good.
Because if he's taking you somewhere that maybe you needed to have something previous, he tells you where to go to get it.
Oh, that's nice. I just love the idea of the format. Everybody should write like that.
Oh, yeah. The format is great.
Okay.
So
you dug in and you jumped around a little bit. But some basic questions here. Why is it important to be accessible in the first place?
Well, in the first place, Allison, the most important reason that as a web designer you should be accessible is because it's the right thing to do. You know, it's just the right thing to do. You know, as more and more people get on the internet, there are going to be plenty of people that don't have all of their visual or auditory or cognitive marbles. That's a terrible thing to say, isn't it? But there are a lot of people that have various disabilities, but it's not like they're never going to go on the internet.
One of the things I'd like to think about is, why would I want to limit my audience to a subset of everybody?
Exactly, exactly.
So if I can make it more accessible to everybody, why not? Why wouldn't you do that even for your own, greedy heart?
Well, you know, that brings me to the second point about why you should be accessible, and that's because it's good business.
Mm.
It's very good business. If you have a website out there, if you're a business and you have a business website, then, like you said, why limit the people that are going to be able to take advantage of your business by leaving out part of the audience that could benefit from whatever your product or service is?
And I think also the internet is a spectacular place for people with disabilities in particular, that if you can't get out and go somewhere, but you
exactly.
can go online because, you know, you can do it from a wheelchair or with your hearing aids or whatever, you know, whatever your particular mm-hmm. disability is, it's the most accessible thing. It's a fantastic tool.
It is. And do you know that if you practice creating websites that are accessible, not only are they more accessible to people with disabilities, but they're more usable for everybody else?
You know, one of the things I stumbled across is that people are making websites now that play nice on iPhones. And I checked with one of my consultants on this topic, is Susan Gerhardt, who happens to be visually impaired and has given me a lot of advice. What we started doing is we're trying to compile a list of sites that have been made pretty for mobile devices, because those are really easy for screen readers to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So did they talk about what kinds of disabilities you should try to accommodate?
Well, actually what Jeremy did is he kind of broke down disabilities into five different categories of the type of people. The first thing that you want to know is that a disability, when you're looking at someone using the internet, a disability is any condition that makes you have to use some type of help or some type of assistance, like, for instance, a screen reader.
Okay.
A disability is something that's going to call for additional help to be able to use the internet.
Okay.
So actually, when you're looking at disabilities, you're looking at designing a website for these helpers.
Oh, okay.
You know, the first type of disability, and this is one that tons of people suffer from, this is a visual disability.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not exactly talking about blindness, but think of color blindness.
Oh, yeah.
There are lots of people who are colorblind, and if you're using colors that blend or colors that don't have adequate contrast, you're going to have people that are colorblind that are never even going to see what you put on there. So it becomes very important.
Wow.
Auditory impairments, on the other hand, if you're not using audio, then you don't have a problem there.
Right.
You know, but we're podcasters, Allison.
Well, one of the things I make sure I do is I put as much in writing as I can, so that people with auditory disabilities can participate as well. Unfortunately, the interviews I do don't end up in there. But actually, you can probably do some things with Everzing. That's that website that actually is taking all of our podcasts and translating them into English, into text, I should say.
That's an excellent idea.
Yeah. So. All right, so any other kinds of disabilities we should be paying attention to?
Well, sure. You mentioned this yourself. Mobility. People that cannot get out anyway. You know, people that... All right, I'm going to give you an example. There's a wonderful woman by the name of Glenda Watson Hyatt that I was lucky enough to interview on Views from the Coop about a year ago. And Glenda is afflicted. She doesn't even really call it afflicted. She has cerebral palsy. And this woman does more in a day than I'm probably ever going to do in a lifetime. And the cerebral palsy that she has, it actually allows her to use her left thumb. Hmm. So mobility.
That's her whole tool right there.
Yes, it's her whole tool. She went to college. She typed all of her papers herself using her left thumb. Jeez. And the interview, Allison, that I did with her is she had just come out with a book called I'll Do It Myself.
Wow.
And she talked about the challenges. She was very lucky. She had parents who encouraged her. You know, Glenda, you can do whatever you want to. And it was a very interesting interview because what I had to do beforehand is I had to write out my interview questions, send them to Glenda, and she typed out all of her answers. And once she typed out all of her answers, she was able to have her screen reader, which she named Kate, answer the questions for me. And it was great because it was a live interview. It's back when I had a web conference room I asked the questions and Glenda used her left thumb and she hit the button and Kate gave me the answers.
Oh, wow. Wow.
It was great. And she had, that's a big mobility impairment there, but she was able to use help with Kate and with just other preparations to get beyond it.
Now, are there issues in how we design websites that would go towards mobility, or not that one so much?
Not that one so much, but as like I said, with this one, if you have a website where you have many, many chances or opportunities or even demands for people to click here, click here, click here, and you've got Glenda sitting there that's got a left thumb, you're going to wear her left thumb out. You know, so if navigating a website is a point-and-click type deal, it might not necessarily be that easy. Or it, depending on what the mobility disability, ooh, that's great, mobility disability. Depending on what that is, being able to navigate a website could be particularly tough.
Now, I heard a metric that's used in software development by companies that do a good job of software development, that you don't want anyone to ever have to click more than 3 clicks deep. So maybe that's the kind of thing to think about, is you don't want them to click, to click, to click, to click, to get to the thing, you know, or arrange things so that you only have to go 2 or 3 clicks in at the most.
Well, that's something that when I very first started designing websites, Allison, that's one of the very first things that I learned. Mm. And when you're talking about the mobility impairments, a lot of people with mobility impairments, they choose to do what Glenda did. They choose to use some type of speech recognition software for Windows. One that you hear about pretty often is Dragon, Naturally Speaking.
Right.
For you Mac chicks out there, there's actually Mac Speech.
Yeah, I did an interview with the people from Mac Speech. It's the product is called Dictate, and it's not out yet, or maybe it just came out. So we're pretty excited about that, to finally have a good voice recognition application.
Well, depending on what the impairment is and how severe the impairment is for the mobility, probably the easiest thing to do would be to use something like this. And I want to insert something here, Allison, about this book that I just absolutely loved, and which is another thing that made it really hard for me to get through it as far as reading straight through, is that it seems like on almost every other page, when Jeremy tells you about something like Dragon Naturally Speaking or like Mac Speech or like many of the other resources that he tells you about, the bottom of the page is going to have the website that you can go to.
Oh, wow.
To pick that it's wonderful. So I was constantly, I'd read a couple of paragraphs, then I would have to rush to the website to see what he was talking about.
Yeah, I think we started on this book 2 months ago or something, right? I thought you were just a really slow reader.
No, I had to go check out all this stuff he was talking about. And he talked about a lot of stuff.
Now, like I said, I'm not a web developer, but more and more of us are creating these blogs. Is there anything specific we can do as you talked about the color issues to make sure they're not, we're not putting like a dark green next to a dark brown that nobody with colorblindness could ever see? Are there other things we can be doing One of the questions Susan Gerhardt mentioned to me was that having the sidebar on the left is really a pain in the butt for screen readers because you have to wait until it reads all that junk first till it can get to the stuff in the middle. Did you read anything about things like that?
No, I didn't, but it's probably in there because just about everything else is. but as far as a blog goes, people are not just writing text blogs. People are inserting pictures. People are inserting video. People are inserting audio. And one of the things as a blogger that you can keep in mind, Allison, is make sure that for every graphic or every audio file or any type of media file that you insert into your blog, make sure that you have a text description. Make sure you have an alt tag.
You know, I've bragged a couple of times on the show. I use Feeder to create my show notes, and by Steve Harris from Reinvented Software. And when he first created it, it's real easy to insert images, and it had a place for the alt tag, but you could skip it. And I asked him if he would force us to do it. So now, if you're using Feeder, you cannot put an image in and not put text. I mean, you could put glop,
great,
I suppose. But yeah, I'm kind of proud of that I asked for that and he implemented it. That was pretty neat. Now, I've always wondered whether I'm being any help at all because the image, let's say I name all my images. So my image might be menu pick in sketch. Well, all I can think of to put in the alt tag is menu pick in sketch. So how much time should you spend creating really fascinating words in there, or is that enough?
What you need to put into your alt tag, number one, you need to keep it short.
Oh, okay.
But what you need to put in your alt tag is you need to put something in your alt tag. Number one, you don't have to say, some people think that if there's a photo that they need to say, this is image of Allison, so that people will know that this is an image of Allison. You don't have to say what it is, because it's got an image tag already. So when you get a screen reader, the screen reader is going to say this is an image.
Oh, so you'd get, but this is an image, this is an image of Allison. You'd hear it twice, essentially.
Right,
oh,
right.
Okay.
You would hear image, image.
Oh.
So all you need to do is just include a short description so that a screen reader can give a short description to the person that is listening about what that image is.
Okay.
And one of the worst things you can do is for hyperlinks, don't use click here. That doesn't tell anybody anything.
Oh, interesting.
It tells them nothing.
Well, unless it's part of a sentence. Like, if you want to open this this database, please click here.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that's something else. You bring up another point, Allison, is that the information in an alt tag doesn't need to include any information that's already in the text. So if you already have a good explanation in the text, then your alt tag could be a word or two.
Oh, okay.
But you don't need to repeat any information. Like if the text in your alt tag is already on your website or already in your blog, then there's really no reason.
Okay, well, I'm certain I do that because I'll say in the following image, you can see that, you know, I've pulled down the menu in Sketch on the right-hand side where you can send it to the web. And then in the alt tag, I'm going to say that again, usually.
It's really pretty easy when you think about it. Think about what you would want to hear. If somebody's reading you a book, do you ever listen to like a radio reader, the radio reader on NPR?
No, uh-uh.
Okay, I listen to this guy all the time. He's got a wonderful voice, but he reads books. On NPR. And I'm a big reader anyway. And one of the things that I enjoy about a book is I enjoy an author who can give me enough description that I can picture the situation. I don't want to have overly described and all that kind of stuff, but I like to know enough about the picture that I can visualize it myself.
I see. That makes good sense. I've tried to think, what would I get out of looking at it and to try to provide that same experience only in written form, but almost all of my images are just following an explanation of what I just finished saying. So that really does help. Now, you were going to talk about accessibility guidelines.
Accessibility guidelines. Okay, accessibility guidelines. This is where, when you're talking about why be accessible, this comes to the part that it's the law, Allison.
Ah.
You have to provide accessibility to everybody on the web. And there are guidelines for being accessible. And there are guidelines for that are put out by, what is it, the W3C or WC3? I always get that mixed up.
I think it's W3C.
I think it's the W3C. But it's got the web accessible to anybody. But there are actually, Jeremy describes, and I'm going to go ahead and tell you exactly what these are, because nobody can say it better than he can. He actually gives you 10 principles for web accessibility.
Oh, nice.
It's great. Avoid making assumptions about the physical, mental, and sensory abilities of your users whenever possible. Your users' technologies are capable of sending and receiving text. That's about all you're ever going to be able to assume. Kind of scary.
Well, oh, I see. Okay. All right.
See, when you turn the computer on, the computer can send and receive text. That's about all you'll be able to assume about anything that somebody's using. Okay, users' time and technology belong to them, not to you. You should never, ever take control of either without a really good reason.
I like that one.
We've just talked about provide good text alternatives for any non-text content.
Okay.
Use widely available technologies to reach your audience, something that just about everybody has. Okay, use clear language, which you already do. I know because I read your blog all the time.
Thank you.
Use clear language to communicate your message. Make your sites usable, searchable, and navigable.
Okay.
Design your content for semantic meaning. And maintain separation between content and presentation. That's tough.
What does that even mean?
What semantic means? Semantic, that's what words you use. You know that.
Semantics. Okay.
Semantics, okay. Yeah. It's that California Southern accent thing going on here. I know what this is all about.
Come on, Paige, speak English, would you?
This is English. This is the only English I know. But it's very difficult to maintain separation, too, between your content and presentation. There are a lot of websites out there that presentation is the content.
Okay, and by presentation, what does he mean?
Okay, let's take, for instance, a PowerPoint.
Okay.
The whole idea behind PowerPoint is to present content. But have you ever heard of death by PowerPoint?
I make a commitment right here and right now. I will put this out there. I will never put a PowerPoint presentation on a website. Never as long as I live. I personally think it was written by Satan. So I just will have nothing to do with PowerPoint whenever possible. Maybe Keynote, though.
that proves the point right there. Because some people are so busy trying to use their PowerPoint presentation and they're concentrating so hard on the presentation that the content gets lost. You should be able to, if you're going to give a talk somewhere, you should, and technology just runs away, the electricity goes out, you should be able to give that same talk without the benefit of the presentation part. I mean, I've been to places where some guy's going to get there. Oh, well, the electricity's not going to work, so I guess I won't give my presentation. Well, you know, do you not know your topic? What's the deal here?
You know, I've been fighting with people at work. I'm pushing podcasting inside my company, and everybody wants video, and I ask them why, and they said, well, so they can see our PowerPoint presentations. It's like, you know, unless you have an incredibly complex diagram that you have to be pointed to spots on that diagram to explain what you're saying, you shouldn't even need PowerPoint.
Mm. Exactly.
To me, it should just be crib notes for the speaker to remember what they were going to say, and that's it. So, okay, any other accessibility guidelines there?
Yes, you want to progressively enhance your basic content by adding features, but do it progressively. Allow it to degrade gracefully for users who cannot or do not want to use them. Don't put something on your website that, in order to get your content, people have to use it.
Yeah.
Remember, we're looking at text here, content and text. And as you encounter new web technologies, apply the same principles when you're making them accessible. And these things apply to just about everything you need to do to design an accessible website.
Wow, that's a really good set. You know, the more you've talked about it, the more I think I want to get this book. This sounds really, really interesting.
It is. It's a very good book. And you should see mine. I'm sorry to say, Allison, but it doesn't look like it did when I received it. It's got dog ears in it. It's got bright pink index cards sticking out of it.
Oh,
everywhere.
That's a sign of a really good book then.
It is. It's got yellow highlighting everywhere. And it's a used book. And I want to give any web designer out there a piece of advice right now. If you've been designing websites for a while and you haven't taken into consideration accessibility, your job's going to be a lot harder, because it's a lot easier to design accessibility into a website as you're creating it. It is a pain to have to go back and do it.
Well, you know, I had this dream that you and I could talk for 10 minutes, but I should have never thought that was going to happen. We've been
Yeah, you are dreaming, Allison.
I don't know what I was thinking, but so I am going to try to cut us off here. But before we go, tell us a little bit about your show, because you have a pretty interesting format and a very interesting audience.
Oh, my audience is so interesting.
What's your show about? It's called Views from the Coop.
Yes, it's called Views from the Coop, and it's a show that was spawned from a radio show that I used to do. And it's pretty much a Windows version of your show, Allison.
Oh, okay.
You know, except for you're a lot more techie than me. It's a show that does everything to avoid geek speak that I could possibly do. It's a technology show for people who are not real familiar with technology but want to know what's going on.
Cool.
So I tried to, my co-host is Kim Beasley, and we like nicknames. I'm Paige Chicky Chicky Isinger. Imagine that. And she is Kim Beasley, the blog queen.
Okay.
And she's like I am. She tries to speak in plain English and talk technology.
I think one of the funniest things I've ever heard was, I was on your show once and I really enjoyed it, because listening to it afterwards with your calm Southern drawl going on, and you take your time to form your sentences, and then I would answer like this, and I would talk like this, and I was answering all my questions, because I knew I only had 15 minutes to get those answers in, and then you talk with your calm voice. It was like being in a car where somebody's accelerating and braking, accelerating and braking. It was entertaining, but...
I never thought about that. I'll have to go back and listen to that show again. That was a fun show.
I was howling listening to it, because our styles are very different, but the same basic principles. So now, you do it live, right?
We do it live. We do it on Blog Talk Radio, and that has been one of the greatest resources for us this year, because it allows us to do the show live. We have a telephone number where people can call in and participate that way. Use Skype, Allison, like you and I are using right now. You can use a regular phone, cell phone. But if you don't want to do that, you can always participate by chat.
Oh.
So you can, when the show starts live, if you have a Blog Talk Radio listener account, you can log in, you can see the chat, you can type your comments in, you can listen to the show and chat at the same time. So you have it's really nice being live like that, because you have a couple of different options to be able to participate by chat or by voice, whichever you'd like to do. I think I can get up to 5 people. Well, it'll be 3 people in addition to Kim and myself. So we can have up to 5 people talking on the line with us at one time.
So you can turn people on and off?
Yes, I am the one. Kim calls in. She just does the telephone thing. And I actually manage the switchboard. So if somebody gets out of hand, I can cut them off. I can turn their microphone off.
But so can you have, like, let's say 20 or 30 people call in, can you switch who those other 3 people are between those other 17 or whatever?
Yeah, it's like a queue. If somebody calls in, if there are 5 people on the line and somebody else calls in, I think they're put into a queue.
Oh, okay.
So that when somebody hangs up, and the way it used to work is that when somebody called in, their microphone would just come up. But the way it works now is, when somebody calls in, I can see that they're on the line, but their microphone is automatically muted.
Okay.
When they call in, and I can choose to open their microphone.
Great.
When they get there.
That sounds like fun. Any other closing comments about the show?
Just that it's time for you, Allison, to come on the show.
Well, I'd be glad to. I think one of the things we've had trouble with scheduling is it's actually like on, what time do you do it in?
We do it at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, which is 4 p.m. for you, I believe.
And it's on a weekday, though, right?
Yes, we generally do it on Thursdays.
Yeah, that's where the rub comes in for me, because that would be taking vacation time for me. So, but you never know. I might pop in sometime soon.
Well, you know, Allison, we just might change our schedule for you. You never can tell.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on the show, and this was a great review, and I definitely think I'm going to pick up a copy of this book. Again, the name of the book is Design Accessible Websites by Jeremy Sidick.
Excellent book.
Thanks for coming on the show, Paige.
Thanks for inviting me, Allison.
Well, I sure hope you enjoyed that, because we really had a good time. After we stopped recording, Paige was giving me a really hard time, because I said that the conversation should be about 10 to 15 minutes long before we started. It was everything I could do to stop after 30 minutes. I think I'd like to have her back on the show again soon, because that was just so easy. She's so fun. She knows so much. She says, I'm the geek. I don't know. It sounds like she knows an awful lot of stuff I don't know anything about. Okay, I know that's kind of a big field, but bear with me. Well, let me know what you thought of the show. Drop me a line at allison@podfeet.com, or you can send an email to Paige at chickychicky@gmail.com. Heck, email us both. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.